Tonight we're going to dive into Ruth chapter 2, and I am looking forward to this. We're not going to get very far at all, but I think that what we do tonight will hopefully be informative and memorable and will serve us well as we go through the rest of this book. I want to read starting in verse 23 of chapter 1 to remind us of what's going on. Verse 22 of chapter 1, and we'll read down through verse 2, and we'll just kind of remind ourselves of where we are and what's happening. Ruth chapter 1, starting in verse 22, "So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech," that was her husband's name, "whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" And so we remember that Naomi and her family left Bethlehem at least 10 years earlier, her husband and her two sons. There was a famine in Bethlehem. God was getting after the Israelites because of their rebellion. That's why there was a famine. And they tried to get out from under God's discipline. "We're going to get out of here. We're going to go someplace where it's better." They went to Moab. Now, that was not right to leave, and it wasn't good to go to Moab. Both of those things were wrong. And the Lord first took Naomi's husband, Elimelech. He died. And then her two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, married Moabite women, which again was contrary to what God had called them to do. And they were married to these women, Orpah and Ruth, and for 10 years didn't have children. And then both of her sons died. And so Naomi now had no husband, had no sons, had these two daughters-in-law, heard that there was food again back home in Bethlehem, was going to go back and bring her daughters-in-law, but realized, "Why do I want to bring these two widow women who are Moabites back with me to Bethlehem? I have no way to provide for them. They're going to be widow Moabites in Israel. That's not exactly the top of the social ladder." And probably, too, every time Naomi looked at these women, it reminded her of everything she lost. We saw that Naomi was very, very, very bitter. In fact, she says, "Call me bitter," when she gets back home to Bethlehem. And there's a lot of ways that she acted in response to everything. She was blaming God for it all. Had a very bad attitude. But in the midst of that, Orpah said, "Okay, I'll go back to Moab." But Ruth said, "I'm not going to leave you. Where you go, I'll go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you live, I'll live. Where you die, that's where I'll be buried." She made this commitment, this covenant of family with her, gave Naomi, the bitter Naomi, this wonderful expression of love and commitment. And Naomi's response to that was to just finally quit arguing with Ruth. She didn't recognize the blessing she had. She didn't see what God had just given to her. She thought she came back with nothing. In fact, that's the way she described it to all of her friends when she got back home, because she looked like a different person than she had 10 years earlier. And she said, "I came away fruitful, and I came back with nothing." Not even acknowledging, really, Ruth that was with her. But Ruth continued and showed her love. And we read there at the end of chapter 1 that they came back at the time of the barley harvest. As I was praying and studying for tonight, I was trying to find a title to give this whole chapter. And the title that struck me is to call it "The Lord of Chance." Because that's one of the things we're going to be talking about as we dig into this chapter, not tonight, but later, about chance. About how God works in chance. And is there even really such a thing as chance when it comes down to it? As I was studying this, I was thinking about the name of God, Jehovah Jireh. Anyone remember what the name Jehovah Jireh means? Jehovah Jireh. Besides my wife, who I talked to about this on the way here. Huh? Yes. Yes, the Lord who provides. And that name was recognized about God where? Where was God called Jehovah Jireh, the Lord who provides? Huh? No. When Abraham was going to offer Isaac, and the occasion was God had told Abraham to take his son, his only son, go offer him up on this specific mountain, Mount Moriah. Abraham took him up there and was willing to kill his son in obedience to God, had his hand raised, and the Lord sent the angel to still his hand and say, don't do this. And then after that, Abraham looked, and what did Abraham see? A ram. And what was going on with this ram? The ram's horn was stuck in the bush, in the thicket. And Abraham took that ram that just happened to be on top of that mountain, who just happened to have its horn caught in that thicket, and offered it up as a sacrifice. And there, Abraham named the place, the Lord will provide. God worked in all of those circumstances, was testing Abraham, was teaching Abraham, was proving him. But we see that God worked in all of this and just by chance, right, provided for him. And I think we're going to see that lesson gets taught over and over throughout Israel's history, how God just happens to provide. Amazing circumstances of chance, right? And I think we can all probably, if we stop and really think about it, testify how God has showed himself to us in that same way too. Not through a ram with its horn stuck in the bush, but how God just happened to bring the right pieces together at just the right time to give us exactly what we needed. And so we're going to see God doing that here in Ruth and be able to dig in. So they came back at the time of the barley harvest, right? And the barley harvest was significant because that was the very, very beginning of harvest time. The barley and the wheat were planted at the same time in the fall, and the barley was the first crop to get ripe. Okay? The first crop to get ripe in the spring. And that's when they came back, because barley would be followed by wheat, and it would be followed by other things as well. And if you can imagine, what does the name Bethlehem mean? Anyone remember? What's Bethlehem mean? House of... We got one here in town. Bread. House of bread. Bethlehem means house of bread. So do you imagine that there were some fields with grains in them around Bethlehem? Oh yeah, this was a big time. I mean, the city was named for this, right? The barley was going to be used to make bread. The grains were an important, essential crop. And so they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the most fruitful time of the year. Barley was usually harvested right about this time. Late March, early April is usually when the barley harvest comes in. And I got a picture here of a beautiful golden field of barley. And after barley would come the wheat and flax and figs and summer grapes and dates and fruits, and then finally olives in the fall. So I want to talk about tonight what life was like, because there are some things that we need to understand, really three different things we've got to understand if we're going to really get Ruth. First, we need to understand a little bit about harvesting and farming, how that worked in their culture. Second thing we need to understand is about gleaning, the laws of gleaning. And then the third thing I want to spend a little bit of time on tonight is the kinsman redeemer concept from Scripture. So let's go back and let's talk about harvesting, okay? So here we've got a picture of a beautiful field of barley, and getting a field like this harvested was a lot of work, and it usually involved lots of people. And what they would do would be to take sharp sickles in their hands, and they would cut down all these stalks of barley. Okay, and you're looking right there at the very top of a piece of barley. At the top of the stem, you see up there nestled all those kernels of barley at the top. Okay, but these were at the top of these long stalks, right? And so they'd have to go through and cut all those things down with a sickle or with like a machete or something so that they'd all be laid on the ground. That's part one. Obviously, that's a lot of hard work. But you don't stop there. That's just the beginning. The next thing you do after you've cut those is you would gather them into sheaves. We just think about that. Right? They would take the barley and they would gather it together into a sheave, a clump of stalks, and they would tie them together. Okay? And you say, well, why not just pick them up and throw them and go do what you want to do? Well, because part of what needed to happen was the barley needed to what? It needed to dry. Because, yeah, you have a question? No. No questions? Oh, you're just blocking yourself. Okay. I thought you were raising your hand, but question, Bethany. So the sheaves of barley were taken because they had to dry, and they were gathered and clumped together in the fields like this, okay, so that they could all stay upright. Why does a sheaf of barley need to stay upright?
You don't lose the kernels.
So you don't lose the kernels. And it keeps them off the moist ground. So when there's dew and things like that, the dew will come up at the base, right, the stalk, but it's not going to touch those kernels that are kept up there and held up there to dry. And they'd have to stay up there and dry probably for a week or two or three until everything dried out really good, because the next thing they're going to be doing is going to require it to be dry. All right? And so when they were bringing in the sheaves, the next step in all this was to gather all these sheaves and transport them to a place. Well, actually, this is a picture here. Sorry, of these are the tops that where the kernels are inside the husks on the barley if it's been separated, and ultimately what you're wanting to do is to get the kernels of barley out of those husks, okay, that are at the very top of that barley stem. And so they would transport the sheaves. You can see a bunch of sheaves piled up to a threshing floor, okay. And the threshing floor was a round place, usually, that was kind of at an upper elevated place where the winds could come by, because they're going to need the wind to help them with this work, or at least a breeze, or at least somebody taking and fanning some things. Not because it needs to dry out more, but because of what they're going to have to do. So they've got all these stalks of barley that are dried, and they're going to take them and they're going to spread them over the threshing floor. And then they're going to go around with oxen, or with, in this case, you got like a horse or mule that's attached to this board that probably has some rocks on the bottom of it, that's meant to go over the tops of those stalks of barley and to separate the kernels inside those husks from the husks themselves, okay? So it's trying to shell the barley, so to speak. As you can imagine, trying to do that to each individual little piece of barley, that would take you forever. But if you get it all laid out there and you go over it like this several times and someone keeps turning it, eventually all those little pieces, the grains of barley, are going to separate from the husks. Well, once that's done, okay, the next thing is then to winnow this. There's a picture on the bottom right there of somebody who is taking the separated husk and barley, and they're putting it in a little thing and throwing it up in the air. And the idea that the wind will come by and blow away the lighter husks, and the heavier grain, the barley itself, will fall down to the bottom. And so eventually you keep doing this enough, and if there's wind going by, you're just going to be left with the good barley, the heavier barley, in your little basket thing, and the other stuff has blown off. That's called winnowing. Sometimes they could take it, if it's real windy, and just throw it up in the air, and the wind would blow away the husks, and the barley would fall down, and eventually you'd be left with all the barley on the threshing floor. But even after you do that, your work's not done, because what's going to be on the threshing floor with all that barley? Yeah, other stuff, right? Especially if you got an ox or mule or something like that. There's going to be other stuff in there. So you got to gather the barley. You got to pick out all the other stuff from that, because you want, at the end of the day, what you want is some clean kernels of barley to have. And then once you've got all that, then you've got to take it and put it in bags and take it either to the market to sell, or take it to a silo where it can be stored and kept dry. And then after that, you have the cleanup. So they gather all the chaff, which is the husks that blew off while they were winnowing it, and they gather and they rake that all together, and then guess what they do with it? Burn it. And have a party. Imagine after doing all that work, you'd want to have a party too, right? Does that sound like a ton of work? I mean, that's what these people did. They were farmers. They didn't have all of the fancy equipment that we have today that does a lot of this for you. They had to get out and do it by hand. And so it wasn't just a one or two person job. They had teams of people who worked together for weeks, who would go, first it's the time of cutting, and they go from field to field, cutting all this stuff down and making sheaves and stacking them. And then once that was done, they'd go back through to the ones that were dry and they'd transport them and everything else. And so this was a ton of work. Now that we've talked about how this works, let's talk about the laws of gleaning. Can someone describe to me what gleaning is? Have you heard of gleaning before? Some of you have. What does gleaning mean? Yep. Yep. So you can imagine, if you had a big field, like they're in right there, those three ladies are in, and the reapers had gone by, and they had taken their machetes or their sickles, and they had cut stuff down, and they went through and bagged or made sheaves out of what they could, do you think that they got every piece of barley? I mean, you all know. I mean, y'all seen somebody mow the lawn before, right? And then go rake it up. Do you get every piece of grass? I mean, you usually try to get the stuff that's kind of clumped on top that looks bad if you're raking it up, right? But if somebody else wanted to go back by there with another rake and rake it again, there'd be more grass left, right? Okay? Well, it was the same thing with this. That the reapers would go and they would try to be as efficient as they could and get what they could, but they didn't get everything. Right? So the gleaners were the ones who would come along and pick up the leftovers. Now, there were actually laws about gleaning in the Old Testament. This was really, really important. In fact, this is what Ruth asked Naomi. Can I go glean in somebody's field? Let's look at three passages tonight. I need three readers. Who would like to help me read tonight? First passage is Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. Just two verses. Anna, you're making eye contact. Thank you. Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. Who else is going to? Jonathan? Leviticus 23, verse 22. It's just one verse. Leviticus 23, verse 22. And then who would like to read another passage? Bethany? Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy 24, verses 19 through 22. So Anna has Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. Jonathan has Leviticus chapter 23, verse 22. And Bethany has Deuteronomy 24, verses 19 through 22. And we're going to read these three verses. And I want to tell you, young kids, pay attention to this. Pay attention. All right, go ahead, Anna.
When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the grains of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God.
All right. So remember the things that were said there to us. Jonathan, read Leviticus 23, verse 22. Thank you. And then the last passage, Bethany, if you'd read Deuteronomy 24, verses 19 through 22, nice and loud. Thank you very much. So those laws we just read about, they talked about fields, harvesting in fields, about olives, about grapes. I want us just to think about the fields tonight, because that's what's important to us as we're studying Ruth, okay? What are three rules about gleaning that apply to the fields that the Israelites were to harvest? From those things that we just read, what's one thing we heard about what to do with the harvest when it comes to gleaning? Do not glean don't harvest to the corners. And Jonathan's mentioned, don't go to the edges. So the first rule we see is do not harvest to the edge of your field. Leave some along the edges. Okay? What's another thing that we learned about gleaning? Huh? Well, that's what gleaning is for. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But what's another rule of gleaning, of harvesting as it pertains to gleaning?
Don't go over it twice.
Don't go over it twice. Don't go through and gather stalks of grain a second time to go back and pick up something, a stalk that you missed on the ground. You go through it one time. You get once. And then what was that other rule we read that's kind of similar? I think Jonathan read it. Well, maybe Bethany read it. I forget. Yeah, so if you're going and it's time to transport all those sheaves that you've gathered together to the threshing floor, and you leave one because you forgot it, or it fell off the cart, are you supposed to go back and get it? No. If it gets dropped, if it gets forgotten, you leave it. Why don't we harvest to the edge of our fields? Why don't we go through and pick up stalks of grain that we missed And why don't we go back after a forgotten sheep? Who are they for? The widows? The fatherless, which is an orphan? Sojourners, like aliens, not like space aliens, but people who were not from Israel, right? And then for the poor. So people who were poor or widows or from another place, not Israelites, or fatherless, they were allowed to glean. Those things were to be left for them. So to illustrate this tonight, I need at least two reapers, and I need a gleaner. Who would like, and I'm going to see how many reapers we need, but I'm going to say at least two reapers. I need two reapers and a gleaner tonight. Who would like to be a reaper? Jonathan, you're going to be a reaper tonight. Joey, I think you can be a reaper too. I want to use you in a bit, Ava. Okay? I got two reapers. So Jonathan and Joey, come up here. Who wants to be a gleaner tonight? Adriana, you're going to be a gleaner, okay? So come up here, sweetie. We've got Jonathan and Joey, who are our reapers. And Adriana, you come up here, and you're going to be our gleaner. All right? Now, we need a field of barley, don't we? Right? So tonight, we have a lovely field of barley all ready here for us tonight. Now, before we reap this field of barley and gather in these sheaves that are all nicely tied up together for us, we have to remember what are our rules, because Joey and Jonathan are our reapers. What are your rules? You have three rules. First rule is you do not gather the edges of the field. So as you go by, you cannot grab anything on the edge. Rule number two, you only get to go through once. You've got two hands. And whatever you can get in those two hands, if anyone else wants to come up here and see, that's fine. You can come up here and stand around. That's totally cool. Whatever you get in two hands is great. But you only get one trip. And if you drop anything, if you drop a sheaf, it's dropped. You can't pick it up. Okay? So, Jonathan, you're going to go first. Remember these rules. Not the edges. You only get one time. And if you drop it, you drop it. So you can harvest some sheaves there. You got two hands. All right? Yeah, just grab it, man. Go for it. Harvest the best you can. You get two grabs. All right, reaper one is done. I'm going to need more than two reapers. Okay, Joey, see you over there to your spot. Sit down. Joey, you're next, sweetie. Remember, not the edges. You cannot grab from the edges. And you can grab whatever you can grab with two hands, one time. And that's it. All right. Levi, I need another reaper. All right, you know the rules, don't you? Let's make it happen, man. Oh, okay. Ava, can you do this? Okay, be a reaper for me. Two hands, do not grab the edges. Don't grab the edges. Just whatever you can grab from the middles here. And two hands. If you drop anything, you leave it. Oh, just leave it. Okay? All right. All right, Dad, come on. Come on. Bethany, come on, please. You're next. We got more here that can be harvested. Okay. So whatever you grab. All right, Anna. Going from youngest to oldest. Come on, wait, Anna. All right, we've got some guts. Get up here. Yeah, they're almonds. Yes. These are almond kisses. Oh, she dropped one. Oh, she dropped two. Oh, no. Need another harvester. Come on, Micah. Trying to leave with those with the biggest hands for last here. Dropped it. Alright. I need one more. Gail, you want to come up here? Alright, sweetie. Okay. You can grab these right in here, okay? Can you just grab those in there? You can use both hands. You can use your other hand and grab those. Alright. So, Adriana is our cleaner. So everybody else is gone. Who got most of the candy? If you look at the reapers, because the reapers all be gathering for one, the field owner, right? Who ended up getting, if you add all the reapers together, who gets the most candy?
The reapers,
right? But Adriana, you can try to gather up whatever else you can. Okay? So whatever else you want to grab up, and if there's some on the floor, you get those too. You get the leftovers, okay?
Yay!
All right. Go ahead and grab what you want, sweetie. So the gleaner gets to come along after everybody else is gone, and they got to pick up what's left. Now notice, we're going to talk more about gleaning later, but if there's any other kids who didn't get any, you're welcome to come up and get some. Casey, they'll be here. Okay, I think you guys get the idea about gleaning, right? Right? We learned about the three rules, and they're important. Because this is what Ruth is going to be doing. She's going to be a gleaner. Okay? Coming and getting the leftovers. Why did the Lord have the Israelites provide for the poor this way? Why did the Lord have them do that? That's right. He wanted them to remember, you were poor. You depended upon other people. You guys went down to Egypt because there was famine in the land. You went down there needy. And you grew as a nation, but you were slaves. You were needy people. And you were provided for. I took care of you. Now you have the opportunity to come into this land. Did you guys earn this land? No. God gave it to you. Whose land was it? It was God's, right? It was the Lord's. And what happened to Israel when they wouldn't obey God? The land wouldn't prosper, or he'd even have them taken captive out of the land? He wanted them to keep in mind that this was God. And he said, I'm going to give this to you. You're going to be blessed. But here's the thing, right? I want you to leave some for the poor. And in each of those passages we read, in two of them in Leviticus, he ends it by saying, I am the Lord. This isn't an option. I'm telling you to be compassionate like this. And in that passage there in Deuteronomy, he also makes such a strong statement like that as well. He says, I command you to do this. I mean, he just told them, I tell you, command you, you do this. The Lord is teaching the Israelites to love others the way He had loved them. In a very practical way. Right? What's another reason, another good reason the Lord had the Israelites provide for the poor like this? They had to work for their food. They had to work hard for their food. But there was an opportunity for them, if they were willing to work, even if they were poor, to be able to go and have what they needed. And so he didn't say, go and do all this work and then give all your barley grains to the poor. He said, you make a way for those who are poor to be able to come and work and get what they need. And gleaning was harder work even than the reapers. Because the reapers got to go by and take the first things, right? They got to go and just grab whatever they could, handfuls. But the gleaners were going around and picking, had to work a lot harder, cover more area to get the same amount of stuff. But there was a way for them. Any comments or questions before we go on? One more thing I want to address tonight. The kinsman redeemer. There's three passages we're going to look at here as well. This is something that's going to be really, really, really important in Ruth, because Boaz is going to be our kinsman redeemer. Okay? And we need to understand what the rules were, what the laws were about kinsman redeemers. So we're going to look at three passages. We're actually only going to read two of them because of time and the length of the passages. Who wants to read Leviticus 25, verses 25 through 28? Micah, you'll read that one. And then I need someone to read the last one, Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10. Who would like to read that? Levi. All right. So let's read Leviticus 25, verses 25 through 28, Micah. Okay, so I need three of you. Ava, can you come up here? Joey? Adriana, that's fine. Come on up. All right, we're going to pretend you're brothers. All right? So, Adriana. All right? You own this property. Okay? That's your deed. That says that you own that piece of property. You own some land. Okay? All right? You own that. But all of a sudden, you get really poor. You can hold that. Okay? And what do you need if you're poor to feed your family? You need food. Where are you going to get food? Where do you get food at? Where? Where do you get food? You go to the, you go to Cars, Walmart, Fred Meyer, no, Costco sometimes. Yeah, you go to the grocery store, right, to get your food. But when you go get food, do they just let you get food and walk out?
No.
What do you have to give them?
Your card.
Your card that's got money on it, right? But what if you don't have any money? Are you going to be hungry? So, if you don't have any money, but you got this piece of property, that's worth money, right? What are you going to do with that? You think maybe you sell that and get some money so you have food? Okay? So you're going to sell that to Adriana, and Adriana, you're going to give her your money. You give her that? Now, Adriana, you own property, and you got some money, so you're happy. But, this is land, okay? And land is important in Israel. Why is the land so important in Israel? It was their inheritance. Remember when they came into the promised land, that land got divided up by tribes and then divvied up by families? And so when you got a piece of land, that was meant to be in your family and in your tribe. That was your blessing from God. And so to just go and sell the property, if you got poor and you needed the money from it, and go sell it, well, you can do that, but how is that going to stay in the family? And so we have somebody here. Joey is a kinsman redeemer.
A kinsman means that she is a close relative, and she is somebody who is Ava's sister, right? Brother, whatever we're going to call her, right? And she wants to make sure that property stays in the family. So because Joey is related to Ava and their sisters, okay, she wants to make sure that property stays in the family. So what's Joey going to do with that money that she has? What are you going to buy from her? Are you going to buy that property? Right. So you're going to give her the money, and Adriana, you're going to sell that property to her. Nope. And so now the property stays in the family. You guys give each other a big hug because your sister just bought that back for the family. So that stays in the family, right? So that, thank you very much. You can go sit down. Thank you. Can I have your deeds and cards? Thank you. So that property stayed in the family. So one of the first things the kinsman redeemer would do is to make sure that stuff stayed in the family, to step up if somebody got poor or if they died, to be able to step up and take care of those things. A second thing a kinsman redeemer would do, we're not going to read all this, so let me fill in the blanks. Purchase the, what's the blank say? Purchase the property sold by a brother who falls into poverty. He is poor. Number two, if somebody kills your brother, have you remember reading a scripture before about the blood avenger? The blood avenger would be the relative who would step up to avenge a relative who was murdered. Okay? And there were cities of refuge, and there's all sorts of rules about that. We're not going to go into that, but what's interesting is the same word in Leviticus that is redeemer is translated in Numbers as avenger. Same word, same exact word. And the blood avenger was the kinsman redeemer who would avenge the blood, the murder of the relative. So it wasn't just when a brother died, but when they were murdered, the kinsman redeemer, the blood avenger, would step in to avenge them, especially if it was an actual intended murder, not an accident. There was a provision made for if it was an accidental death, the person who did it could be spared if they followed certain rules and made it to the city of refuge before you got to them. But if it was murder, you get to take them out. We're not going to act that one out tonight. But the third one, we are. Third one we are. Levi is going to read to us this, and we're going to act this out. So I need some volunteers. Look at these older boys. I need, how about my three kids? They're over here. We'll leave you out of this, Anna. Actually, no, Anna, you can be involved in it too. How am I going to do this? So, Anna, so one of you, who wants to be the first brother? Who's going to be the Mikey, you're going to be the bad brother. I think she's on. Grace, you're going to be the good brother. Yeah. Anna, you're going to be the wife. Anna, come over here next to your husband. Nope. All right. This is going to be kind of weird. Grace, you just sit there. Levi, I'm going to adopt you. No, you're reading. Jonathan, come on. You're my kid now. You get up here. All right, you go over there next to Micah. All right. Oh, Micah. Here's some sandals for you, buddy. All right. Anna, you hold on to this. Just hold on to it. Don't just hold on to it. All right. So, Levi, you're going to read this to us nice and slow. We're going to read about this third law about the kinsman redeemer type things. What's supposed to happen? Leviticus.
Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 10. Just read a verse at a time. I'll tell you when to go. Okay, so here we have, these two are married, but this one falls sick and dies. So Josiah, you lay down there and die. No, I'd let you die on the floor. That's good. Thank you. All right, so poor Anna's husband died. But fortunately, he has two brothers. This brother has the opportunity to marry her. In fact, has a responsibility to marry this poor girl who has no husband now, no children. Are you willing to marry this woman? No. No. Jonathan, are you willing to marry this woman? Yes. The answer is yes. But he's the oldest. He's got a responsibility. Right? He's got a responsibility as a brother to marry this wife of his brother. Right? Is this confusing? So what do we do when somebody does not fulfill the responsibility of being the brother that takes care of the wife? Go ahead, keep reading for us, Levi.
It shall be that the firstborn which she bear shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, and that his name be not put out of Israel.
So being the oldest, the next oldest, it's your job. You're saying no. Keep reading for us, Levi.
And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuseth to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother.
Okay, so you come here before the elders of the people, and what's the problem, Anna? What do you tell us in your words? He won't marry you. And you need a husband, right? So what are we supposed to do? Levi, tell us what we're supposed to do.
Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him. And if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her.
So, Micah, we're talking to you tonight. Are you willing? You have a responsibility to step up and marry your brother's wife. Are you willing to do this? No. All right, Levi.
Then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of elders and lose his shoe from his foot.
Okay. So, get his sandal. Take his sandal from him. All right. Keep on reading, Levi.
And spit in his face.
Oh! What was that part? Say that again for me. What's she supposed to do?
In his face.
Spit in his face. Now, we're not going to do that. That's kind of rude. But we have to make provisions for this tonight, Anna. If you come and take care of this mean brother of your husband. Okay, Anna, take care of this horse. It's all good. It's all right. All right. Finish this off, Levi.
And shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that hath his shoe.
I forgot to make a sign. I forgot that. But Micah's name is now he who has lost his shoe. No longer my man with no shoe. All right. Thank you guys very much. You can go be seated. All right. So we learned about the kinsman redeemer and the responsibilities of the redeemer to buy property if their brother has fallen poor or has died, about avenging a brother who was murdered, and then finally to marry the wife of a brother that dies. It's getting later, and I'm not going to keep on tonight. But we're going to go back. I want you to remember these things. Hopefully all these things that we just did are going to help you remember what we've been talking about. And so as we go in and start talking about Ruth and Boaz, and you hear about them gleaning, and you hear about him being a kinsman redeemer, and we get to Ruth chapter 4, and we see somebody pulling off their sandal, you're going to know what's going on, right? We know about these responsibilities and these laws, and so we can help us understand this better. And get a better picture of Ruth. Any questions or comments tonight before we close?